Chances are, you've been hearing about the 400th anniversary of when the first enslaved Africans arrived on America's shores. U.S. Senator Chuck Schumer, just last week, spoke about it at a commemoration ceremony.
400 years ago, they came here, 20 and odd Africans, forcibly taken from their homelands, separated from their families, shackled below decks on a terrible journey to a strange land, never to return.
Senator Schumer learned about the significance of this date from the 1619 Project. It's a collection of essays published in the New York Times Magazine. The entire magazine is dedicated to the topic which ties the systems and cultural norms created during slavery to today. This project was spearheaded by Nicole Hannah Jones, an award-winning investigative journalist covering racial justice for The Times. And I caught up with Nicole recently to talk about the impact this project has had so far on America's collective understanding of not only slavery, but the impacts of it, which Jones says is deeply embedded into the fabric of this country.
When I pitched this project, I was very, very intentional and very clear that this was not just going to be a history, that we were going to show that you can look all across American life in all of these different aspects of our society and many things that you think have nothing to do with slavery. And we're going to actually, through very rigorous reporting and history, show you that these all have connections to the legacy of slavery and the anti-Black racism.
Jones says she and her colleagues were intentional in drawing a through line. For instance, there are essays about the treatment of enslaved people and how migrant factory workers are treated today, how prisons owe their cruelty to slavery, even how Black music is a purely American sound. It's such a profound reframing that people have had visceral reactions to it. For instance, you can actually watch unboxing videos of people receiving copies in the mail.
Oh my God, y'all, I have been looking for this and kind of done brought it. She is the plug. Oh my God.
No. I ain't know if I'd be able to get it. Look that area where I could. But your boy done found it. Your boy bought a 2 copy in it. They ain't know.
Been waiting on this. Finally here. 1619 Project. We'll have to buckle up for this one.
And just a few weeks ago, Jones and her colleagues announced they'd be handing out free copies of the magazine in front of the Times in New York. And with a line wrapped around the building, 2,000 copies were gone within minutes.
I just got an email from assistant superintendent in Newark, and she said that parents came to the school board meeting with copies of the 1619 Project and said, "We want this being taught to our kids in the curriculum." Mm. These parents are very unlikely to be the kind of quote-unquote typical Times reader. I have had people of every demographic within the Black community. So, you know, not just your college-educated, quote-unquote professional class who have read it and heard it, but regular working folks like the people in my family and come up to me and said, "I got a copy for myself, and I sent a copy to my 90-year-old mother in Alabama because she'd heard of it and she wanted it." So, again, I think it is the quality of the production and the argument, but also producing something that speaks so directly to these communities in a way that respects them and their stories that we don't see a lot. And we're very, very conscious of who the typical Times readers are, and that this project needed to get into the hands of people who are not our typical readership. So yes, I did personally fundraise in order to print more than 200,000 additional copies that we were and are distributing in communities that, unless you get home delivery, you actually can't even go, you know, into your supermarket or your gas station and pick up the New York Times.
On the other side of this, there have been haters on this project. Newt Gingrich tweeted and talked about it on Fox News. And of course, you expected that. But I'm listening to all of this and I'm thinking it's much more than that. There are these think pieces out there calling on you and your colleagues' work and saying that you're lies. It really comes down to a denial of history. What do you think this says about us?
I lay this out in my opening essay for the project. We have been a country built on a lie. We have been a country that from the beginning has tried to hide the paradox of our founding, that the men we call our founding fathers knew from the start that what they were doing was wrong and hypocritical and stood in the face of the stated values that they put out in the founding documents. And so we have been engaged in a 250-year cover-up ever since then. And, you know, every country creates its myths, and its myths tell you, you know, give you a sense of pride and a sense of shared history. And Black people are just the obstacle to that, because we are the daily reminder of that lie. And so the resistance to this reframing that, one, says we have to stop deifying our founding, and we have to stop deifying these men we call our founders, because not only were they flawed, they engaged in one of the most atrocious things that we ever could. Of course there's going to be pushback to that. Then to take those people who have been placed on the very bottom of the racial caste system in this country, who have always been consider the least, and to make the argument that we are actually not the least, that we are the most American, I knew that that was an evocative argument, and I expected actually more pushback than I received. And to make that argument in the New York Times versus making it in a book or making it in another publication legitimizes that argument in a way that people who are very much invested in the idea of Black pathology and of American exceptionalism are uncomfortable with. What they cannot actually dispute are the facts. You can't dispute that the first 10 of our first 12 presidents were enslavers. You can't dispute the fact that we were one of the last countries in the Americas to end the institution of slavery, that we engaged in racial apartheid for 100 years. That was so appalling that Nazi Germany used it as a model. You can't argue those facts. People don't like the framing. I'm comfortable with people not liking the framing, but the pushback just speaks to what happens when you pierce these founding myths and you actually have to deal with the reality of what this country is.
But Jones says the responses that have moved her the most are from Black Americans.
The most important thing to me, and I'm actually gauging the success of the project based on the feedback that I'm getting and saying I have accomplished what I hope this project would accomplish, is that, you know, you grow up in a country that has marginalized your stories, that has made your stories feel insignificant, that has always treated you and your communities as problematic, with a sense of shame almost about the fact that we begin our story here with enslavement as if we were just passive throughout our entire time here and just a problem to be solved. And I want Black Americans and Black people in the diaspora to take from this, one, the understanding that we are central to this country, both in terms of the racist structures that were built to justify slavery, but also in our resistance to those structures and our kind of fundamental role, not just in building wealth, but also in building this democracy, in that we are not a problem. We have never been a problem. We have responded to, you know, some of the most appalling and atrocious generational circumstances with an abiding faith that we can make this country live up to its ideals. And I've never considered myself a patriotic person, but through bringing this project to fruition, I want Black people to feel that we have as much claims to this country as anyone else, and that we will not be marginalized out of the country that we helped build, and that we should actually take a great deal of pride and not feel that sense of shame anymore.
You've received less pushback than you expected. Do you think that that might be a signal that we collectively are ready to listen?
So, yeah, I do think we are much more primed to listen. But of course, my constant frustration as a journalist who writes about racial inequality is that listening and talking is not enough. We have to address the harm. And I don't think that we're ready to address the harms. But will this listening, will this understanding then lead us back to a place where we can talk about how do we then redress the very particular harms that have been visited upon Black Americans?
That's Nicole Hannah-Jones, award-winning investigative reporter who covers civil rights and racial justice for the New York Times Magazine and one of the authors of the 1619 Project. Thanks so much for joining us, Nicole.
Thank you very much.
And we'd like to know if you've read the 1619 Project, and if so, how has it impacted you? Your thoughts are welcome at hereandnow.org.